So you guys, other questions on assignments one or two? Like, why are we doing such simple stuff? Why don't we do something complicated? We are going to do something complicated, starting with assignment three. What's the most difficult part of assignment three? What is assignment three? How many of you have gone to my website and got the handouts and taken a look at the assignments just in case we're in a hurry? Just in case we only have 4 weeks left. Look, there's a CD out floating. Looks like almost everybody is taken care of, huh? Maybe you don't have to make any more copies. Does anybody know what assignment three is besides me? Do you? What is it? You should remember, but you don't.
Application to have two classes.
Okay, stop there. Any place where you read the word applet, just pretend like you're unconscious when you read it and go by and see the word application instead. We used to try to have people do both, but it's too complicated when you're starting off. We'll do applets later on. Keep going.
One class is to be subclass
and
right from the other.
Mm-hmm. A class and a subclass, whatever that means.
The subclass is to have at least three constructors.
Three constructor methods. We're going to find out what those are.
Which will be called during the creation of three subclass objects.
We're going to make three objects of the subclass type, and we're going to use a different constructor method, whatever that is. You think I'm speaking Martian here, huh? Just wait. Go ahead.
An example, the subclass student has a default constructor,
uh-huh,
a constructor with one string argument, and a constructor with a string argument given the student's name and an integer argument given an ID number.
There you go. See? What a good example that is. Thank you. All right, so in assignment three, we're going to have to know what a superclass is, what a subclass is, we're going to have to know what a constructor method is, we're going to have to know how to overload constructor methods. We're going to have to know how to use overloaded constructor methods in instantiating new objects. It's a whole bunch of stuff. But the good news is you don't have to worry about it yet. Okay? I want you to hear about it first. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain something about what a hierarchy is and how it's represented in object-oriented programming, as opposed to a hierarchy like a, you know, political hierarchy or a corporate hierarchy. How it's represented in object-oriented programming, and then I'm going to challenge you to invent your own hierarchy. So once you know what one is and how it's represented, then you can begin thinking about what hierarchy you're going to use. If you pick wisely, early on, how can you when you don't even know what it is? If you choose wisely early on, then that hierarchy will serve you for the rest of the semester. Because you can use it in all your programs. And in fact, you're going to have to use it over and over and over. If you make a wrong turn, very common, then you have to go back and adjust. What's a hierarchy? Anybody want to guess what a hierarchy is? Well, I'm going to give you an example of a hierarchy that you can't use. And the reason that you can't use it is because I use it in all my examples in the demo programs. There are demo programs available for all the different assignments that we do. They don't do the whole assignment, but they do enough of it that they can give you a clue as to what direction to go. And in my demo hierarchy, I use the following classes. I have a person class, and I have a student class, And in some of the examples, I even make a grad student class. Now, just a casual observation, can you tell me what is the relationship between those? They're all persons, right? This is the most general kind of person. This is a more specific kind of person. And this is a more specific kind of student. So I'm going from generalized to specialized, first of all. Secondly, and most importantly, there is an is-a, as in the English is a grad student is a student. A student is a person. Okay? That's called the is-a relationship in object-oriented programming books. Versus what would be a different kind of relationship? Yeah, I could have a hand. A person has a hand, perhaps. So does a student, so does a grad student, but hand is not part of the person hierarchy. This is a has a relationship. So let's say you made a hierarchy building, and then you had a subclass called room. Is that a good example of a hierarchy? Is a room a building? That's all you have to do to figure it out if the answer is yes or no. Is you say, is a room a building? Is a grad student a person? Yes, it follows the test. Is a grad student a student? Yes, it follows the test. Is a hand a person? No, it fails the test. Is a room a building? No, it fails the test. If you say livable space, then a room and a building are both in the hierarchy. It just depends on how you pick what you put at the top. It's just a semantic problem. It turns out to be more than a semantic problem if you're designing programs. The reason I make this design issue part of your assignment 3 is because it turns out it's one of the more difficult things to do in object-oriented programming. Make a decision about, well, what's a good way to divide up my problem? Okay, now you guys have it a little more difficult than that because you don't have a problem yet. Well, I give you a problem, but the problem I give you is invent a problem. Sorry. Some people complain about that. They would like to have a nice, orderly presentation. Here's the hierarchy, write the code, this is what it's supposed to do, hand it in, go away. Sorry. I'm not that kind of guy. And so a lot of people get queasy because what I'm asking you to do is be a little bit creative. But it's not very difficult. In fact, what some people do, because I say you can't use this hierarchy, I'm gonna say this and then see how many of you do it. Some people turn this into animal, dog, Dalmatian, and then they hand in my code. And everywhere where it says person is animal, and everywhere where it says student is dog. So dogs end up having ID numbers, and grad students have subjects. So the Dalmatian has a subject. So that's one approach to it. What I would prefer to see you do is invent your own hierarchy, run it by me, which you have to do very quickly, unfortunately. So you have to think on your feet or on your seat or whatever, but you've got to think right away. What's your hierarchy? Because you're going to need it to do assignment 3. Okay? So just start thinking about that. What you can do is pick something you're interested in. Vehicle, car. All kinds of them, right? Any of you, if you ever take a biology class, right, that's exactly what they do in biology with the families and the species and all that stuff. Okay. So, that's a thinking problem. Now's the time to start thinking. But while you're thinking, I'm going to talk about a couple other things. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the most commonly missed problem on our midterm pretend exam. And the topic is, what is an instance variable? What is a class variable? What is an instance method? What is a class method? What's the difference? How do you tell them apart? How do you find it in the code when you see it? Okay? So, jargon thing, but it also turns out to be an important idea to understand. So, what I will do is I will draw a picture of an object. Okay? That's what an object looks like in this class, and see, it's also the shape of the first letter in the word object, so it's easy to remember when I draw it. Okay? And what is an object made up of in this language? What are its parts? Variables and methods. It's got variables and methods in it. Many variables and many methods, and it has some variables that are the scope of the entire object. And there are some variables inside the methods that are called local variables. So there are local variables whose scope is just a method. There are variables which are available throughout the class. Okay? But don't let that word class fool you. These variables break into two categories: instance variables and class variables. And the way you tell them apart is class variables have the word static in front of them. What word does a class method have in front of it? Static. Have you ever seen one of those? What's it called, the one you've seen so far? Main. Remember, public, static, void, main. Okay, so main is a class method. If I had a variable that was static int I, and it was declared in the scope of the whole class, that would be called a class variable. If it doesn't have the word static in front of it, it's an instance variable. So what's the difference between them? It turns out to be very important. Let's say that I have a class. I might as well make it something that I can use later on today. Data type of that variable? Name. You don't know what that data type does or how it behaves, but that's the data type. What's the name of the variable? Name, with a little n. That's just to keep you confused. I can say name, name, and stuff like that. So if people walking by from a history class will be going, In fact, sometimes people put their head in when it gets too hot in here, and they say, what is this you're teaching me? Okay, so that is data type name, variable name, little n name. Is that a class variable or an instance variable? Instance variable. What's the data type of that variable? N. This is the data type. Data type has to do with storage. Is it a class variable or an instance variable? Okay. What is a cosmic ID? Who cares, right? Okay, here's how this behaves. Let's change this to that. You can call it anything you want. Once again, Chuck is my favorite variable name for a wild card. In any case, here's what happens. If I have person objects, let's say somewhere over in my program, let me put it in like that. And let me put here what are the arguments to the function called main? Capital S, string, that's the array notation. We'll work on that shortly. Yeah, does it have to be called args? It can be called anything. What the compiler looks for is that pattern there, array of strings of some name. Okay, and let's not get this mixed up with that. Okay, and inside here, I'm going to make some variables called person. There's my data type. There's three people. And inside the person class, I am going to have a setter method. In fact, I'll have two setter methods and a getter method, and we can learn a whole bunch of stuff all simultaneously. Now, what do you suppose a setter method does? Sets a value. What do you suppose a getter method does? Returns a value, right. In fact, let me move person over a bit so that you guys don't get the code mixed up. What are my variables? Okay. Now I'm going to make a method that allows me to set the name, and here's the rule for setter methods. Now, you want to learn this right away because it's a convention. It's not a rule like a compiler rule, a syntax rule, but it's a convention. When you have a class, and the class has variables in it that can take on different values, which is what variables are for, then these are called the properties. among other things in the jargon, or attributes, depends on whose environment you're using. In any case, they take on different values. The convention is to put in a setter method and a getter method that are public. Notice this isn't a public variable. What kind of variable is it? Package. It has what's called package access. What's that mean? It means anything in the package. What does that mean in English? It means other classes that are in the same folder or directory level if you're in Unix. Okay? Any other .java file in the same directory level, in the same folder, has access to this variable, but nothing outside that. So if you do this in assignment 3 and then you want to use it in assignment 4, you're not going to be able to access name directly because it's in a different folder. So you need to have a method that lets you access it. So, and you make those public so they can be accessed by anyone. Public void set name. There. See, isn't that easy? In reality, in practice, what you would have is you would have some kind of rule for evaluating whether this name is okay or not. Right? I don't want to set that name. You already have a name, something. But in our simplistic programs, and everything we do in this class is simplistic because we're doing big picture stuff, right? So we do simple-minded things in a broad way. We just have that, just so that we have it available to us. And then I have another method. Oh, look, see, I can return an object just like I can return an int. Remember last night we had an int going back somewhere that we were printing out? Now I have a name going back. Notice that setName has an argument. This is called an argument or a parameter. GetName, in this case, doesn't. It's a way of communicating. This function here is communicating through a return value. This function here is being communicated to through an argument. There's two different paths of communication from outside. And the reason we want to communicate from outside is because in the object-oriented world, we have all these different parts of the programs that are independent of one another and can be mixed and matched with any other code. So you have to have a way to get in, and you have to have a way to get out. So we're all this semester, we're going to work on how do you communicate from one object to another. If you go out and you read a book about object-oriented programming, they would call that passing messages. If you are a normal person, you would say, I'm calling a function. It's the same thing. Okay, so if you read these books, sometimes you think, I must have gone to the wrong school. I don't know what they're talking about. There's actually a direct translation because these object-oriented programs don't do anything other programs. They're all running on a general purpose computer, right? So nothing special about them. It's just a way of thinking. So you reorganize yourself, and you have to learn, if you're going to read a book about it, to say when they say send a message, what they really mean is call a function. See? I call this function, I send this object a message. I call this one, I send it another message. This one says, here's a name. This one says, I want a name. So what do I have to do here? Return name. The data type of the return value is the same as the data type of the function, so I can do that. It's perfectly all right. There's nothing special about that. Okay, so I've made my... What else should I have? I don't want a constructor yet, because I don't know what that is. But I do know what setters and getters are. And what is the code that goes in here? And what else do I want? You see, it's a lot easier to do this on a keyboard because you can cut and paste. Okay, so each one of these, see, each one of those methods, they're all independent of one another. Okay? You don't nest a method inside of another method. Every method is independent. The order that you define them, these are definitions of the methods, the order that you define them has nothing to do with the order in which they're executed. They are executed whenever they're called, in whatever order they're called, as often as they're called. If they're never called, we saw that last night with my sample code, you don't call it, it never happens. So we ran our program just did something boring. It's because we didn't call the methods. Then we call the methods and it does something more interesting. Not a lot more interesting, but a little more interesting. And that's the closing brace. Okay? So, over here, now I've got three people, and those three people have these methods and those variables. So far, so good? How's it going? You want the rolly one? You happy with the... Okay. That one's more fun. Okay. Well, if you get tired of that, just walk over and get the other one. Okay. So, do these people exist? Not yet. They are like spirit beings. Why? I haven't instantiated them yet. You like that word? I haven't instantiated them yet. So let's instantiate one. Let's instantiate this one first. How do I do that? P1 equals new person. Yay. Now I have an instance of a person. This person exists. Do they have a name? No, they don't have a name for a person. We're going to learn there's lots of different ways to give that person a name. But right now, we don't care. Do they have an ID? Yes, they do have an ID. What's their ID number? Okay, in Java, all variables, numeric variables, are initialized to zero automatically. Booleans are initialized to false. Objects are initialized to null. So these three variables had a value of null, N-U-L-L. At this line of code, they're null. And we're going to learn about the null pointer exception because you'll get lots of them through the semester. These are what are called null pointers, but we don't have pointers in Java, so don't worry about it. And now, this person, P1, is no longer null. There is an object in there. And that object doesn't have a name. What's the value of its name? Null. Right? Because it's an object. How do I know? Because it's not an int, the long, those things I wrote last night. The eight primitive data type. So it must be a derived data type. You just don't know what it is yet. Okay? What? The ID is zero because it's a primitive data type, and all primitive numeric data types are initialized to zero. Okay, so I want to give this person the ID number of 999. Set. See, I called this method and I set their species ID to 999. Now, if I wanted, I could put a line of code in here. I could say system.out.println t1. Am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to put a method call as an argument to another method call? Yeah. Because the rule is, I can use this method anywhere where I use an int, because that's its return type. So that's perfectly all right to do that. So now I go out and I get this species ID, and I'm really pleased because I see the number 999. Now I say, t2 equals, new person. Right? And I say t2.333. Okay? Now imagine, if you will, in the spirit of saving time, I take this line of code, because this is how you guys write your programs, right? You should learn to write your programs. I take this line of code and I paste it here. And I forget to change P1 to P2, because that's also what happens. You cut and paste your code because it's faster, and then you forget to change the details, and then you say to me, why doesn't it work? You say, it worked up here, it doesn't work down here. And I said, well, it doesn't work down there because you forgot to change the variable name. Oh, you say. So just imagine that this line is pasted there, and I'm printing out p1.getSpeciesID. What's it going to print out? Ah, see? Here's the deal. You think it's going to print out 999, and you discover that it doesn't. It prints out 333. Because T1 species ID got changed by this line of code. And the reason it got changed by this line of code is because species ID is a class variable with the word static in front of it. And here's what that means. Just forget all this code now, and we're going to go back to pictures. There is the proto-person, the person in the spirit world, the null person, okay? Classes that have static variables in them have memory set aside for those static variables, even if you do not have an instance of the class. So when I say static int species ID, I actually create memory for it, which exists even if I don't have a person. I still have their species ID. And if I had a dog, it could have a species ID, which would be different, and so on. Okay? Now, when I create a new person, that's an instance of a person, P1. Name is an instance variable, right? That's what that's called. It doesn't have static. It's called an instance variable. Here's what it means. It means when I make a new instance, I also make one of those variables. This is P1.name. When I create person 2, here is P2.name. When I create person 3, I have P3.name. See? Every one of them has a different name. Every instance of the class, every object, has its own name variable. But they all share the class variable. Which makes sense because they're all the same species, right? And I should be able to have access to that. Even if I don't have a person, I can say, well, what species type is person? Because I'm writing a big biology program where I'm going to identify all the different species on the planet for assignment 4. That's assignment 4. You probably, you know, you read the assignment 4. You know it isn't that, right? Intergalactic, exactly. Where species no longer means anything. Did I ever tell you what my title is? I have my own little company. And so if you have your own little company, you get to be whatever your job title is you want, right? So you see people like they make CEO and president. So I am Imperator Galacticus. Only my kids take it seriously.
One life
after today, right? That's right. Now he's a college kid. Yeah, I just got to stay there long enough to see him go across the state, and I came back. Okay, so I have 3 people. Look, they're different sizes. Well, that's all right. They all have their own name, but they share this variable. So the rule is, if you have a static variable in a class, every object of that class shares it. Whatever one object does to it, it propagates through the whole class. So, if P1 sets the ID to 999, and I print out the ID of P2 and P3, it's 999. If in P3 I change it to 333, it'll be 333 here and 333 there. There's only one copy that they all share. Okay, very important idea. Yeah.
Why would you put such a variable like that to share between different people who have different IDs?
Because they all have the same species ID in my big program that's, you know, my Noah's Ark program of in Java. Right? I can go through all of the different objects in the Ark, and I can say, nope, I've already got 2 of those. Throw the other one overboard. And here's where it's used in practice. It's used in practice in the color class, for example, because there are 16 predefined colors. White, black, red, green, light blue, dark blue, etc. Okay? And so what they do is they declare those as static variables, and every color object has access to those colors, and more importantly, you have access to them without having to actually instantiate an object. So that I can, in my program, say simply, person.speciesID equals, and it sets it for everybody, everywhere. Now, I have to be careful where I do that because, you see, this is only package access, so I'd have to do that in that package. Otherwise, I have to do it through the set species ID. But I can actually use it, in this case, by simply saying the class name, the dot operator, and then the class variable name. I can use it directly. So, where have you guys used that so far? You used it yesterday. You used it the day before yesterday. You've been busy using it and you didn't even know it. Well, you've got to really narrow it down because you didn't write any class variables in your program, right? Well, you didn't use the static word anywhere except with main. So where have you used a class variable in your program so far? Yeah, system out. Right? You didn't make any system objects, right? Okay, well, when you look at this, that's a class. It's got a capital letter to make it easy for you to identify that as a class. Well, you didn't make an instance. You didn't say, like, system S equals new system. You just went ahead and used it because I told you to. The dot operator means that the out variable is inside the system class. Well, because you didn't make one of those, that means this must be what? A class variable. This must be declared static. There's only one of these. Now you tell me why it's important that there's only one of those. What does out do? What is out? What output? It's a standard output. Where does it go? It goes to the screen. Well, you don't have to say which screen. There's only one screen. It only goes to one place, right? If there were lots of these, when you ran your program, you'd be going, oh, I wonder where my output went today. Anyone back there see my output on their monitor? No. There's just one place that it goes. That's the standard output. If you're on Unix, there's STD out. That's the output. STDIN, that's the input. One keyboard, one monitor. Okay? And then this is a method which is in that class. This is, you know, an output stream. And this is a method in the output stream that formats in different ways. Okay, so now you all know what a static variable is, a class variable is, an instance variable is all the other ones. That's the most common kind. Instance variables only exist if you instantiate the object. So you're going to get into a problem because in your programs, you might be tempted to do something like, I will just write a pretend assignment 3 here very quickly, I hope. You might do something like this. Okay? There's my person. And that won't compile. And you get a funny error. The error you get is I attempted to initialize a non-static variable in a static method. Here's the problem. The code for main has to exist before you run the program. Main has to be a static method. Why? Because it's a startup class. And there's no place to start if you have to create an object of that type in order to get main. Well, there's no place in the program to create the object. See? The runtime engine has to be able to call A3.main without having an A3 object hang itself on. Okay? But this variable here won't exist until I have an A3. So the poor compiler doesn't know what to do with that. It says, well, you want to initialize it, but I can't generate the code to initialize it because it's not going to exist till the future sometime. So, of course, the quick and dirty fix is that, but you don't want to do that. Because then what happens? Every A3 has this person that they're sharing, and if you do something to one, you did it to the other, and you'll get confused. So what you have to do is you have to create within here create a new instance of a local variable, A3. See, this is a local variable, so it's not a problem. I can have this exist when I compile a program, because it's local domain. And then I say A3.p equals new person. Well, that's okay, too, because now the compiler knows, oh, yeah, when I make that, then I can get that, I'm happy. A little confusing, but it's just one of those things. When we learn how to use constructor methods, you'll see what a swell thing that is to be able to do that. But in the meantime, okay, enough said on static versus instance. It turns out to be an important thing to understand, and the reason I spent all up to the first break on it is because almost everybody misses it on the midterm. And you can't afford to not know it in the programming world. Okay? On that, let's take a break, and then we will learn how to do constructor methods, and maybe we will get to inheritance, but I think we'll probably do that tomorrow. But onward through the fog, and while you're taking your break, I'll see if the beast will turn on. Questions while we're doing this? And I'll also put your grades in my book so I can give back your stuff. I won't have to carry it home. Yep. Assignment is... Yep, just set it there. Aaron. Yeah, Sky is going to graduate from college in December. Doesn't that make you seem like an old man? Yeah, he's working over at JPL now as a something gopher for the miser. Oh, I think he's taking general stay away from home and pretend you're going to school. He's actually turning into a pretty good writer. So. He's going into 11th. Yeah. Yeah, you'd be surprised if you saw Aaron. He's about 6'1 now. Yeah. Well, he's a little guy. Yeah, well, he grew a lot. And in fact, we're doing his Eagle Scout Court of Honor on Saturday. Got that. Then for his 18th birthday, he took his dad skydiving. Wasn't that nice of him? Yeah. Northridge. I think what he's doing is he's trying to get into San Diego State, and he has to do a semester or two at Northridge first to make up for something he goofed off. What's that? He wants to go to San Diego State, which is harder to get into than Northridge. I have no idea what he wants to do. He wanted to be a Marine up until... No, even after. If he'd been 18, then he would have joined up, and then that would have been that. But fortunately, he was... Well, as my father pointed out, if you're going to go into the military, go in as an officer. Don't go in as an enlisted man. There you go. Okay. I don't think so. Not so far. So he really did enjoy jumping out of the airplane. Right. The idea is you keep the perfectly good plane around you. Yeah. Yeah, and he really did love that. I was surprised. I've got yours here somewhere. Right? Yeah. Right. Let's see. Some people did it that way. I don't care. Right. Right. The only thing you're going to need for the next one is the get number class. Santos, are you in here? There you are. There's one for you. Excuse me. VOL. This is not the version that you sent me in the email. No. Because I sent you an email back that said, don't send me attachments. Because I'll never look at them. What's that? Well, what are you doing with it? Why are you trying to take his assignment? I just, the first hand that grabbed it. My idea is I just get rid of the thing. Salvación. El Mahdi. They're all outside, I bet. Abdallah. Suda. Hasrini, he's here, but not here. Chun, here but not here. Victor Chen, here but not here. Avakian. Maida. Palladian. Lopez. Bata. Wait a minute, I just went by your two-headed monster here. Do I have something of yours? Maybe it's in my other... What's your name? Wait a minute, I just called your name. You weren't here? Oh, now I've got to go find it again. Just a minute. Don't be disappointed. There it is, right next to Victor. Palladian. I have yours here, too. In big letters. There it is. It was too easy, huh? You want something more difficult, something you can really sink your teeth into. You want assignment 5. Hasuni. Slowly, slowly, I will learn all of your names. How are we doing? Do we have a quorum yet? All back, sort of. Salvacion. El Mahdi. Watch out for that guy. He's going to grab it if you get it close to him. Abdallah. Suda. Chun. Neta. Lopez, Bakta, Eva, El Mahdi, we're back to the beginning. Okay, on through the fog. Okay, where we left off was class variables, instance variables. We are going to pick up here quickly, and we are going to go out and invent a class. First, I'm going to check my default properties. You guys will make sure that you're going to the A drive, or if you're at home, to some suitable drive. I'm going to C colon my documents. I'll just take a quick over there, look over there and see if I have, oh wait a minute, there it is right there. Oh look, I have an assignment 3. Oh, confident me, I'll throw it away and start over. Okay, so what I want to do in assignment 3, I'm going to make a new project. It'll be A3. And A3. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a new class, and I'll make it a class called Person. Now I want you to look at something because this turns out to be very relevant to what we're learning about. First of all, java.lang.object, it's got the word extend here. The keyword extends means in the hierarchy of. So remember our hierarchy where we had person, student, grad student? It turns out that even if I make a person class, which in my program is going to be the super class of my hierarchy, in the actual realm of Java, it's in a more general hierarchy of object. And in fact, all classes in a Java program are in the object hierarchy. And that turns out to be to our benefit. Okay, so every class that we create is automatically an object. And because it's automatically an object, you don't see that in the hierarchy explicitly. I don't have to say person extends object, it does. Java extends it for me. Okay? So, we're going to become sensitive to that as we go along because it turns out to be a really valuable tool. But you can just remember that every class creates objects, and there's the super class called object. So I am an object. Okay? And what I'm going to do now is this is not going to be my startup class. But I do want to have it generate a parameterless constructor so I can show you guys what one looks like. So I say, okay, RoboCode goes out and writes my program for me. And here's what it gives me. Package A3, that's the folder I'm in now. So I can't use anything in A2 that has package access. Public class person, that's the name of my class. And look, here's a function. So you can tell by those parentheses that that's a function. And this function is interesting. It's the same name as the class. It's public, and it's missing something. No data type. Not even void. Okay? This is a constructor function, or more appropriately, a constructor method. Okay? Because it has no arguments, no parameters, it is a parameterless constructor. So when I click that button, that code was written for me. Okay. Now I'm just going to put some code in here. No, if you put a data type, it no longer is a constructor method and won't work correctly. We're going to just go see what this is all about. So here I go out and I compile my program, yippee, it compiled. Once again, what do? You write a little bit of code. When you're on new ground, you do a little bit of code, you do some experiments on that little bit of code, make sure you know what's going on. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'll make another new class. I'll call this one A3 because it's my startup class. I don't care about a I'll put a constructor in it too, and a main. I'll put both in and have RoboCode write both for me. So here it is. I don't want that, and I don't want that, but I do want to keep this line here. Okay? What's this piece of code up here? It's a constructor method. It's a parameterless constructor. Same name as the class, no return type. Now, if you look down at this statement, A3 equals new A3, that's just like what I wrote on the board. This is creating an A3 object. Now, we've already said, like, B equals new B in assignment 1, or get number GN equals new get number in assignment 2. Now, let's just look and see that little, where it just says A3, open, close, parentheses? So what that's doing, that's a function call. This actually is calling a function. What function is it calling? That one. When you create a new object, the constructor method is called automatically. And the point of that is that you can initialize things in the constructor method. Right? So that is the first bit of invisible behavior or unusual behavior in an object-oriented programming language. There are methods which are called implicitly. In this case, the constructor method is called. Okay? So I create an A3 object. This code is called. So this line is executed, now this line is executed, now I come back to here, now the program's over. But what I could do is I could put a piece of code in up here. I could say person P1 equals new person. Now what line of code gets called? Yeah, if I go to the person class, this person constructor gets called. Called automatically. So now what my program does is it goes from this line to this line to this line, and then it's done. And just to prove it, I'll compile it and run it. There's my console, no argument. That comes from the person, no argument constructor. Program over. So I went from one class to the other class and back and then out. In our programs that we write for this course, you're going to do a lot of this, go from this class to that class to that class to that class, back to this class, back to that class, and so on and then out. So your code is really going to be hopping from source file to source file. Rather than what you're used to in other languages is you write some source code and your code executes linearly, or maybe it goes in a structured program, goes from function to function. But you have a handle on where you are in the program. While in Java, in object-oriented programming in general, there is a lot of hopping around laterally, where you will execute code linearly within a given class or in a given method. See here, it goes this line. This line says call this line. So that's going kind of procedurally. But now, hop over, we go to this line. I could go anywhere from here. When it's all done with this, it comes back here, and it goes back to the next statement, and so on. Okay? So far, so good? Let's try something new. I can also, this is the second constructor. This constructor has one argument. I can have as many arguments as I want in a constructor method, and I can have as many constructor methods with as many arguments as I want. But they can't have the same arguments. The compiler checks the data type and the number of arguments. If the number of arguments is the same, the data types have to be different. Okay? So this is a constructor with one string argument. This one is a constructor with no arguments. So back here in my A3 constructor, I'll say person P2 equals new person. And I will send a string. What the compiler does is it gets to that line of code, and it goes over to the person class, and it says, is there a constructor with one string argument? In this case, it's a string constant. String constants in Java are easy to spot. They are in double quotes. Single quotes is a character constant. Double quotes is a string constant. A character constant is a primitive data type. A string constant is an object. So let me compile my program. It compiled okay. If I had put and compiled it, I get an error which says constructor person string comma int not found. So the compiler went over to my person class, it looked through the list of constructor methods, and it said, is there one with a string and an int? No, that's an error, I can't use that one. Go back, correct my mistake, compile it, it's fine. Double what? I would have to put a second argument in here if I wanted to use any other variables or parameters. Compile it, run it, no argument, yo. So it's called both constructor methods. Aren't you happy to know this? This is nice. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting closer to assignment 3. Right? Except in assignment 3, you need to have a class hierarchy. So I'm going to quickly show you how to make a class hierarchy. New class, okay. Now I'm going to call this class student, and what's it going to extend? Person. And I'll have it give me a free constructor to save me some typing. I say, okay, now let's look at this code. Public class student extends person. Student is now a subclass, person is a superclass. Subclass, superclass. In Java, the hierarchy, you can have one superclass. There is not multiple inheritance, whatever that means. There is only single inheritance. Now let's go find out about inheritance. Ready for inheritance? First, we have to have something to inherit. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make up a new class called name. Is it going to extend person? Is a name a person? No. Is a name a student? No. Is a student a name? No. Is a person a name? No. It's going to just inherit object. Okay? And what I will do is I will give this, I will just start off with a simple name, but just a first name. Because it saves me a lot of typing. Okay? And inside here, I will say first equals default, and I'll make a second method, public name string s, first equals s. So now I have a real simple name class. I compile it, yay, it compiles. Now what I can do is I can give a person a name, right? Because I have a name class to work with. Okay? Now, what do I have to do to work with this name? I have to instantiate it. So I can say here, name equals new name. Now I'm going to do system. I want to print out their first name. Name dot first. So I'll just print it out and see what it is. Now, in this one, I'll say name equals new name in. See what I've done here? This one calls the default name. This one calls the name with one string argument. Remember I made up two name classes, one with an argument, one without? Okay. Now how can I use these over in my code? Person P1 equals new person. Person P2 equals new person yo. Default yo. Okay, but default and yo now are what? Those are the first names of the person. Right? You see how that happened? Let's go through how it happened. This line of code right here, well, this line of code calls this line of code. This line of code calls this line of code. This line of code calls this line of code. That line of code calls that line of code. That line of code calls that line of code. That's where the word default came from. Now I've gone hop, 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 and now I come back. So this Java object-oriented stuff does a lot of lateral hopping. So now I've gone through three classes and come back. And in fact, after I do this step, I will have gone through four classes. Because I'm calling the system class its out variable. I'm using it here. So there's a lot of this. Things are going out and coming back together. Okay? When I get to the next line of code here, that goes back to here, it calls this line of code, the compiler says, oh, you want a name with one string argument? It goes to the name class and calls that code and sets the first name to yo. If you have what?
Different classes, different
well, it knows what class because I say new name. It's obvious what class it's going to go to. Then it just looks in that class for that argument. Still, we haven't inherited anything. But what I can do here, let me go back to, let me do this. Public student string S. Okay, now you guys look at this code without knowing anything else. What would be the problem? What questions arise? What's this name and where does it come from? Okay, well, the answer to the question is the person class has a name variable in it. And the name variable in the person class is inherited by student. Yes? No. Because name isn't a static variable. So you can't say person.name. What you can say is you could say super.name. But we don't need to make it easier, because here's what you have to do. I didn't tell you guys this until it's too late to get out. There's a drawback to object-oriented programming. If you're in procedural programming and structured programming, chances are, if you've got the code in front of you, you can follow it easily from one place to another and know what's going on. In object-oriented programming, there are, like, mystery things that happen. For example, if you are in a hierarchy, you inherit all of the variables and all of the methods which are either public, protected, or package access from the superclass. If there are multiple superclasses, for example, if I had grad student extend student, the superclass would be student and person, then I get all of the public protected and package variables and methods from all of the superclasses. That means that you are using variables and methods and so on which you do not necessarily have direct access to. You have to go hunting around to find out what they are, and you have to know how to hunt. A. B. You have to carry a lot of knowledge in your head. So it is like languages, for example, Chinese, which is based on characters. Well, that's a very powerful writing tool because you can put a great deal of ideas into a single character. So you have economy of expression. What's the drawback to it? You have to know what the characters are. You have to know how the system works. It takes years and years and years of education to know how it works. So what you're doing is you're trading individual knowledge for economy of expression. Same thing is going on in object-oriented programming. You guys have, that's why we have that learning curve between assignments 1 and 5. There's a steep learning curve where you have to figure out how this stuff works and become sensitive to it. Once you know how it works, then it's very easy. But, sad to say, there's a little ramp at the beginning where you have to go through the figuring out how it works. If you don't make it up that ramp, you look at an object-oriented program that will not make any sense to you at all. In fact, some of you may have gone and got like the Microsoft tools for doing applications, and they have some foundation classes and whatnot, and so you write a program, you want to write a program that does something with Windows, and so you say, okay, I'm going to pick the Windows application, and it starts off by writing 2,000 lines of code that you have no idea what they mean. Or you might look at an application where you say, it says, okay, now here's the application to run your program, and the whole program says application arrow run. Okay, well, what that is it's an object-oriented program, and they've probably brought in 5 or 6 levels of hierarchy with all kinds of methods that have initialized all kinds of variables you know nothing about. And you have to learn how to figure out from looking at a program where it's been and where it's going. So I have these little simple examples where you can just start to get a feel of, oh, it's not going step 1, step 2, step 3. It's going step 1, over step 1, over step 1, over, back, 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 2, over, back, 3, over, back, and so on. There's a lot of stuff you have to keep in mind as these programs go along. I once again highly recommend this is simple, and you can follow it. Simple, simple, simple. If you make it really complicated to begin with, you don't know what's happened. Because you don't know, did it go wrong here, did it go wrong there, did it go wrong somewhere else. Now I'm going to show you a diabolical and terrible thing that can happen to you. What if I had some code in here, and I would put this in not because what did I just do? Well, it compiled. Oh, look, it compiles. Isn't that nice? What? I am stuck. Here's what's going to happen when you run this program. You'll get an error that says, eventually, out of memory. Eventually. And maybe if you're lucky, you'll get to use the mouse to exit the program. What's happened? What happens when I make a new student? You don't know yet, I'm going to tell you. Here's what happens. See, if I go to my student class, I have a problem here. You see, I'm using name, but name has never been instantiated, right? Or has it? Well, it turns out, here's the rule in object-oriented programming. The superclass constructor is called first, and then the subclass constructor. The superclass constructor is called automatically. If I don't tell it which superclass constructor to call, the default superclass constructor is called. So when I make a new student, if I put some code in here that said, oops, student s equals new student, this line of code actually calls this code. But this code calls new student, which calls this code, which calls this code, which calls this code. So I've made an infinite loop here, and it'll keep infinitely making student objects until I run out of memory. Don't let that happen to you. Okay. But now what happens is, if I make a new student here in A3, that calls this line of code and makes the name. This line of code calls that line of code, so my student's name should now be default. Right? Now what I can do to prove it is I can get rid of that and come over here and say, that. Oh no! Bad news. What does this mean? A3.name@blah, blah, 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 blah. I printed the name object, not the variable. If you print an object, you get the address of the object. That was an address you saw. Now you see their name is default. Now, I designed this program improperly for assignment 3. Why? In what regard is it incorrect based on what I showed you before I pulled the silver screen across the board? The person should be at the top of my hierarchy. What did I do with the name and the person and the what functions that I leave out? No getters, no setters. That'll get me into trouble in assignments 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. So what you have to do to modify this code is you have to have a get name and a set name method inside the person class. You have to have a get first and a set first inside the name class that are public, because this is package access, and this code will quit working in assignment 4. Okay, at that point, I'm going to leave this, and we're going to go over all this again tomorrow, because this is the single most important topic of the semester. If you understand this topic, everything else will fall into place in due time. So I'm going to beat this poor topic into the ground. Okay? What I want you to do with your lab time tonight is I want you to experiment with constructor methods and making a simple hierarchy. You don't have to use this one, but you can use it if you want, because you already have some of it in mind. But I also want you to be thinking in terms of your own hierarchy. Okay? Does that make sense? So, I want you to see if you can get the idea of constructor methods under control. Before you go, I have the assignments back for those people who weren't in here at break time, and I will give those back to you now. Okay. You're back.